Hi, this is Roger Green, host of the Surfing the Mesh Tsunami podcast. This week, we're offering five conversations from episode 9, in which Hannes Hagström joins Jörn Schottenberg, Louise Campbell, and me to discuss recent work on in-office scanning, impact of different diet types, and patient prognoses. Plus, from the vault, a conversation from last year's EASL Congress about patient identification and screening along the clinical care pathway. I begin this conversation by recalling a concern Naeem Alkhouri expressed during S4 episode 50.3, a concern that primary care relying on Fib4 might flood the clinical care pathways with many wrong patients who had false positives, and that this would lead to confusion within the channels. Hannes Hagström describes a role for primary care at the top of the funnel based on clear guidance and training. I suggest he is describing primary care providers simply as triagists. He agrees, but the group also believes that clearer guidance based on a small number of reliable, widely used tests and algorithms will be key to success here. In this context, Jörn Schottenberg suggests that while FibroScan might be the first point of care test, perhaps health record-based algorithms can be created or deployed to identify the optimal number and types of patients within the broader system to bring them into screening for liver disease. This creates another challenge. Hannes notes that a large number of algorithms are being published, but none are becoming standards, and the standards will be the key to primary care as a triage approach. Louise Campbell feels the fact that VCTE is fundamentally non-discriminatory between modes of action make it a good tool as part of this, probably the point of care part, but that we have a lot of screening and education to do before bringing protocols or devices into a primary care setting. As the conversation wraps up, Hannes notes that we will need to keep some patients out of the pathway due to age or low level of disease to identify two qualifiers, and that when we have multiple drugs and different lines of therapy on the market or treatment patterns, this will recast the entire protocol once again. It's striking how fast new research around issues of patient treatment and therapeutic options are stacking up, and how the number of questions grows even faster than the number of studies. This conversation covers several points, but it's pretty strictly focused on treating the right patients the right way, at the right point in time, with the right agent. So, just sit back, listen, learn, enjoy, and when you're done, join the dialogue in our LinkedIn discussion group. So, being the only person on this call who lives on what I'm going to describe as the west coast of the Atlantic Ocean, I'm struck by the idea that all this energy predates the approval of a drug. You come over to this side of the pond and you're going to have all those same issues, except now you're going to have a drug on top of it. So it will amp the energy around the idea that solutions are possible, but I'm not sure the tools are in place. I know Naeem talked a while back about his concern that exactly what you just described, Jörn, happening in one way in Europe will happen in the States, which is an awful lot of primary care are going to send patients on to the hepatologist. Now, in his case, he was concerned about Fib4, but there are lots of different ways to get to sending more patients to the hepatologist, and the hepatologist needs to treat, should be treating, or has the time or space to be available to treat. And it's not clear to me that the practicalities around the pathways are worked out well enough yet anywhere. You know, we've got some models, but I'm not sure that we've got practicalities.
Hannes Hagström.
There was a review a few months ago in Diabetologica sort of arguing against the topic of screening, because with the current pathways we have, it's going to lead to a lot of overdiagnosis and over-referral. And hepatology is a small specialty, so we really need to construct our pathways so it's so simple enough that primary care can essentially do a lot of the workload itself and demystify a lot of what we currently are doing. Like, what does a FibroScan measure of 11.1 mean? You know, if you're going to send that back, not just that number to a primary care doctor, they're never going to know what to do with it. So I just talked to a primary care doctor for another reason, and they were sort of like, we don't want education on diseases. We want education on symptoms, you know. They don't want education on, or at least the one I was talking to, didn't want education on, for instance, mast cell. You want education on elevated liver tests, for instance. So what should I do in this scenario? Because they don't, at the point they are seeing the patient, they don't really know what they have, right?
Yeah, but you're describing primary care as triage, aren't you, when you do that fundamentally?
Yes, exactly. But then the triage will be need to be as good as possible to not triage 40% of the patients onwards in the system, right?
So I agree with that. What I suspect will change that will be the availability to give a simple testing solution to primary care. You know, primary care is confident treating diabetes right now. A large part of that is because of glycohemoglobin, right? You have a single test. Everybody knows what it means. It means the same thing in every setting. And therefore, you can administer the testing and be confident with what you've got. I'm wondering, listening to this conversation, whether VCTE has the potential to be that. Because it's clear when you look at the work that's being done on the various liquid biopsies, that they, and in fact, a lot of the machines, MRI-PDFF, for example, are going to be more responsive to some mechanisms of action and some modes of disease than others. And this is a complex disease. It isn't one disease, it's several diseases. So the question is there going to be any screening technique that's going to be good enough to bridge all that? What I think you guys are suggesting collectively is that if we knew enough about VCTE, that might get close. Or am I overstating?
Time will tell.
Jörn Schottenberg.
Time will tell. That's a good one. It's not a test we can give the primary care physician to test all patients, right? So we need it as a specialist test in a two-step way, or specialist clinics like Louise is offering it. Can't be the first point of care test. We need something simpler, potentially automated, an algorithm that's running. You know, we've discussed this in the back end of medical records. Hannes and I discussed, unrelated to this, on a different project today, something that's called the fibrotic NASH index. And it's a FIB4 on steroids, maybe. It has some more aspects related to comorbidities with A1C and HDL in it. So, I mean, that could be another solution. And I think that's run in diabetes clinics quite frequently. Honestly, I went back to the paper after we discussed today, and I think we have to push the message on FIB4, but there's maybe more than one way to achieve our goals.
Yeah, I think I agree. But I think, I mean, we will all like FIB4, but it's not the perfect test. It's designed in HIV-HCV patients. Of course, a score like FNI, which might also be possible to improve, but, you know, it's designed to pick up MASH plus F2 to F4. So it's sort of designed for our setting. So it's quite clear that such a test would be probably better than to use a model. These are mathematical prediction models, and it's not very simple to do those. Well, it is actually too simple to do that, but it's hard to do them right. And now I will promote a recent paper. One of the postdocs, a mathematician, statistician in my group, just published in JHEP a few weeks ago. It's a review on how you can think when you want to do a new prediction model with me and Peter Jepsen, also epidemiologist, hepatologist in Denmark. So if you want to do a prediction model, read that paper first, because the first sort of idea is that you probably shouldn't do it.
So elaborate a little bit on why not.
You're saying we have too many of those.
Yeah. The problem with prediction models is that you can do a prediction model pretty simple, but it's usually going to be wrong, and you're going to have a lot too many. We're already in the field right now, but if you look at other fields, there are more like 200 breast cancer prediction models. And if you have 200 models, which one are you using? None. You're just inflating the whole field. So instead we all want to publish nice papers and so on and get the fame and glory. But what the field really needs is like finding one good model instead and sort of coming behind that one. I think that's the way we need to go.
Louise Campbell.
And I think coming back to your question, Roger, VCTE, what it does is it doesn't matter. It's non-discriminatory. It assesses the liver that's in front of it. So you may not know what that person's got in a disease, but coming to Jörn's point about the gamma GT and names, when we've approved it recently for NICE, for primary care or non-specialist setting, to be able to put it into primary care, it is strongly linked to the current pathways. So these are, and the GPs were very keen as part of the whole process to say that we will only be referring people to our community and to have our own clinics for FibroScan for those patients that we would have referred to a hepatologist, to screen out the ones who don't need to go to a hepatologist. So by screening the abnormal gamma GTs in their local area, in their clinics. But what we also have is a number of opportunities to educate primary care, where we've put it in Southampton. They've got an excellent model. It reduced their referrals to start with, but it actually then filtered a lot more of the more severe patients in and educated primary care about better patients to select to be assessed to go to specialist care. So I think there's a lot of steps in any of these devices going into a community setting, because at the moment, as Hannes said, GPs want to know about symptoms. Well, the most symptoms are very nondescript, as we know, and then you just can't scan all of those. So we do need those filters, the FIB4s and all of that, to try and detect that. But we need access to these non-invasive tools like Ascopics and FibroScan and things like that in an area to filter the right patients through to the specialist settings and more specialist tests. It's a funnel system. Not only can it funnel in, it can funnel out. Go back to your primary care. They've got access to FibroScan. They can continue to monitor you, and we will bring you back should we need you. So there's lots of work that can be done in redefining pathways now in a more appropriate way with prognostic and monitoring NITs. And we're not yet there. Our pathways are years behind where our technology is. We have until we get them right now with the technology, we're going to struggle.
Yeah. It's also an important point, Louise, like when do we stop actually determining risk for our patients? At some point, it's going to be probably futile to keep a patient in the pathway. If you are 65 or 70 with F0, then it's very likely that you will never experience cirrhosis. So should we then, you know, have a cut point where we stop in some patients? But that also reflects, you know, if you're high risk, you have diabetes and so on, maybe you have a higher risk and you might actually want to keep them in the loop. But refining our pathways to make them more individualizable is also, I think, an important step we need to do in the future, because at some point we might say to patients, well, you're actually sort of free to go. So to say. We were talking a bit that before with when we talked about different diets and the patient should be able to choose and so on. But I guess in a not so distant future, we will also probably have a number of different drugs. And it will be extremely interesting to see, you know, what will be first line treatment, second line, third line combination and so on.
And now back to Roger.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. If you have any questions or comments about the content of this conversation or the entire episode, please put them in the review section of the page in which you downloaded this conversation, or send an email to questions@surfingmash.com. We're still working on next week's topic, but we've got two ideas and they're both great. Until then, stay safe, surf on. We'll see you on podcast. Bye-bye now.